At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Omar Al-Khatib, Director, Corporate Affairs and Investor Relations. Please go ahead, Mr. Al-Khatib.
Thank you, operator. Good morning or afternoon, and thank you for joining us on our first quarter 2014 conference call. On the line with us today, we have Murad Al-Khatib, President and CEO of Alliance Grain Traders, Lori Ireland, our Chief Financial Officer, and Gaytan Barasa, our Chief Operating Officer. Before we get started, I would like to remind everyone that today's call may include forward-looking statements. Such forward-looking statements are given as of the date of this call and involve certain risks and uncertainties. A number of factors and assumptions were applied in the formulation of such statements, and actual results could differ materially. This call may also include references to certain non-IFRS financial measures. For additional information with respect to forward-looking statements, factors and assumptions, as well as a reconciliation to IFRS measures, we direct you to our news release, our website, as well as our recent filings on SEDAR. With that, I'll turn things over to Murad for some comments, and then we'll go to questions. Murad?
Thank you, Omar. Thank you for joining our call today. Our quarter one 2014 results are building from a positive improvement, expansion, and diversifications that we've been seeing in our business, many of which took place in 2013 and ones we expect to continue in 2014. In our current position, with our legacy business continuing to show improvement and our new food ingredient and packaged food segment continuing to develop and grow as we expect, we feel we have a strong foundation for AGT. Our unique mix of global assets, market access, origination strength, international and local management, and access to capital are critical tools to further our goal of building our business into a dominant player in the global food sector. We expect these successes to continue, demonstrating why these investments and strategies are important to the continuing growth of AGT, creating new opportunities, and capitalizing on the ones already before us and maximizing their potential. A number of the highlights with regards to our Q1 2014 quarterly results illustrate the positive improvements in our business. I'm going to ask Lori Ireland, our CFO, to discuss some of these highlights. Lori?
Thank you. Hello. This quarter, the food ingredients and packaged food segment includes the results of our newest subsidiary, AGT Quick Foods, Inc., which contributed revenue of $7 million and net income of $631,000. In addition, we are pleased that the second line in the Minot, North Dakota plant began commercial production during the quarter. Overall, gross profit, adjusted gross profit, and EBITDA per metric ton increased to $79.89 and $44.17 for the 3 months ended March 31st, 2014, compared to $67.82 and $38.87 for the 3 months ended December 31st, 2013. Contributing to the increased per metric ton earnings were improvements in the pulses and grain processing segment to $60.29 and $40.38 adjusted gross profit and EBITDA per metric ton for the 3 months ended March 31, 2014, compared to $58.79 and $37.90 per metric ton for the 3 months ended December 31, 2013. In addition, food ingredients and packaged foods showed adjusted gross profit per metric ton and EBITDA per metric ton of $159.71 and $105.01 for the 3 months ended March 31, 2014, compared to adjusted gross profit and EBITDA per metric ton of $121.06 and $90.77 for the 3 months ended December 2013. The trading and distribution segment showed lower adjusted gross profit and EBITDA per metric ton of $43.91 and $15.40 for the 3 months ended March 31, 2014, compared to $49.60 and $22.22 for the 3 months ended December 31, 2013. This was largely due to fewer food aid tons being invoiced in the recent quarter. We saw the accounts receivable turns for the 3 months ended March 31, 2014 decrease to 48 days compared to 53 days for the same period last year. Inventory turn slowed down to 78 days for the 3 months ended March 31, 2014, compared to 68 days for the 3 months ended March 31, 2013. A buildup of inventory related to food aid family parcels in Turkey contributed to this, as well as the addition of packaged food and other inventory purchased with the acquisition of AGT Click. Also, inventory turn slowdowns occurred in Canada due to railway issues experienced during the quarter. Consolidated inventory and accounts receivable turns for the 3 months ended March 31, 2014 totaled 126 days, which was consistent with our turns in the 2013 year. Non-cash foreign exchange includes a snapshot of outstanding foreign denominated accounts receivable and accounts payable, as well as outstanding foreign exchange contracts, and includes the contract related to the high yield bonds. Note that this is a non-cash item and it will fluctuate depending on the strength or weakness of foreign currencies when compared to the Canadian dollar. On the statement of comprehensive income, there are two foreign currency numbers. The gain of $7.1 million relates to mark-to-market adjustments on accounts receivable, accounts payable, and intercompany balances. The other comprehensive income of $10.6 million relates to foreign exchange differences on our foreign investments. AGT has a treasury process in place to ensure that the need to purchase foreign currencies to settle debt will be minimized if it will result in realized losses on foreign exchange. AGT tracks adjusted earnings per share as it is reported, exclusive of the non-cash foreign exchange effects of our global business. Early on in our reporting, as a public company, we decided to ensure that these effects were clearly stripped out of our results. Inclusion of both gains and losses that result from snapshot non-cash IFRS effects do not accurately reflect the cash flow generating ability of our business. General and administration and marketing, sales, and distribution expenses have increased over the prior year due to our increased global platform and the increased volumes. Current year results include expenses related to the operations in Russia, Ukraine, India, China, and Switzerland, as well as costs related to the new AGT Click acquisition. The general and administrative and marketing and sales and distribution expense for the quarter ended March 31, 2014 include costs associated with market development and accounts receivable allowances, as well as startup costs related to AGT Click. EBITDA for the 3 months ended March 31, 2014 was $17.1 million compared to $13.6 million for the 3 months ended March 31, 2013 and compared to $18.2 million for the 3 months ended December 31, 2013. AGT management is happy with the EBITDA growth. An improvement of EBITDA as a percentage of revenue to 5.49% for the 3 months ended March 31, 2014, compared to 4.9% for the 3 months ended March 31, 2013, and compared to 4.85% for the 3 months ended December 31, 2013. Net debt increased from $318.5 million at December 31, 2013 to $369.4 million at March 31, 2014. The increase is due to lower accounts payable levels typically experienced in the first quarter of the year. As producer settlements that were issued in the latter part of the prior year are cashed in the current year, therefore drawing on operating credits. This seasonal cycle, along with the buildup of inventory to food aid requirements in Turkey, the slower inventory movement from Canada due to railway issues, and the additional inventory related to the acquisition of AGT Click have resulted in increased credit utilization in the current quarter. Metrics continue to be calculated for each facility, and performance targets are being tied to inventory and accounts receivable turns at each plant and country operations level. We feel that continued focus on cash collection, as well as seasonal increases of accounts payable levels, will help AGT decrease net debt in coming months. Of total operating credits available of approximately $182 million, approximately $141 million was drawn at March 31, 2014, leaving approximately $41 million available to draw. AGT and its subsidiaries are in compliance with all covenants at March 31, 2014. Thank you.
Thanks, Lori. Our food ingredient and packaged food segment is certainly the segment of our business we feel provides the greatest future potential. After commissioning our Minot, North Dakota plant in June 2013 and adding a second line of production around the 10th of March of 2014, this platform continues to track positive progress towards demonstrating its growth potential and earnings. Our sales program for pulse flours, proteins, fibers, and starches, both with our partners and through our own global sales system, are developing as we expected they would. Our R&D initiatives, focusing on collaborative research with customers, as well as baseline and application work, is generating customer interest in our proteins and fibers and increasingly in our high viscosity flours and starch products. This is expected to result in assisting in the conversion of test quantities to real commercial sales in both the human food and pet food sectors for AGT. In general, for this segment, market trends are shifting towards lower cost and higher volumes of plant-based alternatives as a result of rising costs of other ingredients growing from dietary preferences such as gluten-free, high fiber, and high protein, and consumer demand for healthier and sustainable GMO-free ingredients. In part, these trends demonstrate the potential market opportunities pulse ingredients may provide, not only in North America and Europe, but around the globe, supporting our thesis and belief that our well-structured strategic entry into the pulse ingredient sector may provide significant growth opportunity and increased earnings potential for AGT. Of course, continued growth in the packaged foods platform is an important component to this segment overall, not only for North America and Europe, but around the globe as well. synergistic trade opportunities, particularly in markets where we have retail business and distribution, or where we're packaging for retail, assists us in capturing opportunities to utilize our asset base and maximizing sales opportunities in all our segments. We expect these opportunities may positively impact our capacity utilization globally, developing new customer relationships that translate to sales and therefore positively impacting our margins and profits. Increases to capacity utilization and volumes in our high fixed cost environment will have a positive impact on our margin and earnings as well, whether in support of our food ingredient and packaged food or our pulses and grain segments. This is certainly contributing to our analysis regarding the feasibility and costs of conversion of existing available underutilized assets and capacity to the food ingredient platform in 2015, as well as potential for Line 3 and Minot as sales dictate. In our legacy pulses and grains processing segment, the continued recovery with regard to volumes and margins certainly will continue to be an important one as well with the asset base we have globally in this segment. This past quarter showed improved results from our operation in Turkey, which we view as a real positive signal that markets are potentially moving towards a return to traditional seasons and activities in the pulses and grain export business. Demand in important markets is expected to continue, as it appears the local production in India and Turkey are impaired. However, with less than reliable reporting of stocks and production volumes, the true measure will be seen in export data from Canada and Australia throughout this year, particularly in the coming quarters. Our Canadian operations have, of course, been impacted by transportation and supply chain issues that are creating problems for export shippers of commodities and goods from Western Canada. The Government of Canada and all participants in the agribusiness supply chain appear to be working together to assist in clearing the backlog of shipments created during the quarter and during the harsh winter conditions. And this will certainly help Western Canadian farmers and exporters move their products to market. For AGT, these issues and delays certainly manifested themselves as impacting our ability to ship volumes of product through ports in Vancouver and Montreal. This resulted in timing-related issues surrounding our sales and shipments, and certainly manifested itself as a real earnings impact in quarter one. Some of the shipment volumes from the ample stocks of pulse products available in Canada that would have traditionally been completed in the first quarter may be shifted to traditionally slower periods of second quarter and into the summer months as equipment availability and weather improves. With alternative freight options being utilized when available, we're optimistic in our ability to manage our delivery chain and capitalize on the market opportunities. Farmers in Canada and the U.S. are getting ready for seeding. Moisture levels appear adequate early in the season in Australia, and we expect another strong pulse production season that will add to the relatively average levels of global supply. But the estimated seeding intentions can change at this time of year. Overall, we're expecting ample supply to execute our program, and we expect margins and volumes in our pulses and grain segment to track as per our expectations, inclusive of transportation issues. We believe we're going to see further improvement in 2014. Before we go to questions, I want to add, as AGT's business segments grow and improve, margins and earnings are expected to grow with them. We forecast the ingredient platform growth may be for the potentially higher margin, less volatile food ingredient sector business focused on ingredient flours, proteins, fibers, and starches derived from pulses, and packaged retail food segments complements our legacy commodity export business for pulses and grains. We're excited and optimistic about AGT's ability to grow business operations and strengthen shareholder value in the long term, though these new segments and a stronger legacy business will create opportunity for sales, earnings, and margin growth in our coming periods. I thank you for your interest in AGT, and I'll go to questions, Omar.
Operator, can we take the first question, please?
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star and one on your touchtone phone. You will hear a tone to indicate you're in the queue. For participants using a speakerphone, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing any keys. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. There will be a brief moment while we poll for questions. Our first question is from Jacob Bout with CIBC. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. I'm going to ask a question on margins just like I did last quarter. And I know it's difficult. What's difficult for us to understand exactly on an apples-to-apples basis because we don't have the historical what's driving some of this. But when we take a look at the gross margin for the pulses and grain processing, you know, we're below where we were last year at this time. And I thought at this point with higher volumes that we'd start to see the margins start to improve. So, you know, how are you thinking about that right now? What are some of the drivers? And then maybe just as a follow-up, when are you thinking about converting some of the plants in Western Canada to handle the or for the processing of food ingredients?
Yeah, okay. So, Jacob, I'm going to attack that question in the two parts. I mean, the pulses and grain processing segment, just remember that apples-to-apples comparison you're talking about, when you take a look at the pulses and grain segment from first quarter of 2013 versus first quarter of 2014, the 2013 results in the first quarter included the value-added pasta business. So that was in that segment before. That's now all been stripped out. And so when we look at it, you know, certainly we're seeing, you know, again, a positive margin improvement from the fourth quarter to the first quarter, even with the, you know, addition of what we would consider to be, you know, fairly material additional costs related to supply chain issues in the first quarter. You know, for instance, shifting production to, or shifting shipping to East Coast destinations versus West Coast, even at the sacrifice of higher freight rates. These all contributed to, you know, potentially dampening the margin that we showed. So we still showed an improvement in that that particular segment.
But isn't part of the plan, or if we go back historically, I mean, we're at double-digit margins. Is the plan still to get there at some point here in the future? Or?
We expect we certainly expect pulses and grain margins to continue to track you know, positively upwards. So, you know, when we look at there's two things we're measuring. Obviously, the segment ones, pulse and grains and food ingredients, packaged foods are our two segments of concentration. Trading and distribution is opportunistic; it comes, it goes. You know, that may scale up, scale down, depending on the opportunities that present itself. But we also look at, you know, our consolidated, you know, position of overall margin per ton. And, you know, we're going to be tracking that to have a balance effect as food ingredients and packaged foods ramp up. You know, we expect that as pulses and grains improve, our consolidated margins overall are going to improve, you know, quite dramatically. So, you know, we're positive on the trend that we see. We expect that the pulses and grain segment in 14, as we go into second, third, and fourth quarter, the supply-demand imbalance is largely resolved. So we end up in a position now where supply, you know, is matching a lot more closely with the demand profile. We don't have a big overhang of supply. We expect that that's going to improve margins. And as we move forward, you know, capacity utilization increase is another big part of boosting our overall, you know, returns on our invested capital and our margins. So, you know, the conversion decisions are going to be evaluated here in 14. And we'll be looking at line 3 addition in Minot and then conversion of some Canadian capacity, likely if sales programs track as expectation. In 2015, you know, we should be in a position where we're looking at material conversions to be able to capitalize on that growth opportunity we see.
But I would assume that, you know, you've seen a lift in capacity utilization over the past couple of years. Are you happy with the result in gross margin with the increase in capacity utilization?
Certainly. I mean, if you look at the capacity utilization, we're just back to pre-crisis levels now. So the ramp up is going to come in the second, third, fourth quarters this year, where we can start to show some of the benefits of some of the diversification programs that we have in place, both on products and markets. So I think the answer is I'm glad to be back to pre-crisis levels. Am I happy with where it is? No, it's going to get better, and we're going to keep driving that.
All right, thank you.
The next question is from Steve Hansen with Raymond James. Please go ahead.
Oh, yes. Good morning, everyone. Murad, just another follow-up question here on some of the utilization studies that you're performing at Minot, or I should say some of the feasibility studies. You know, what are the key graduating factors that you need to see to really allow us to get better visibility on the conversion opportunity? Is it purely just the sales side, or, you know, what are the key gating items we should be looking for?
Well, I guess, Steve, the first thing was, you know, certainly the sales side is going to drive, you know, the conversion. So, you know, one of the things we were very clear about in this strategy is, you know, we had to take the leap of faith to build the first line. And, you know, there was a big price of admission to get into the game here of, you know, roughly $30 million to get in and build that first line of processing. But from there, we've made it very clear it's going to be a ramp-up strategy based on, you know, full utilization of capacity. So, you know, we use the term, and I know, you know, you would love something a little more quantitative, but, you know, when we see true visibility on the full utilization of that line, meaning that we have an existing customer base, that we have forecasts of their purchases and sales, that we're in a position where we're comfortable that the product is going to be moving, only then will we begin the next lines of production, you know, addition. So, you know, what we're focusing on right now is ramping the sales program. And the biggest worry at the beginning was the movement of the starch, the high viscosity flours. That's, you know, the biggest fraction. Mm-hmm. And you have to create opportunities for that. Those are moving. And so that's, you know, probably one of the most important aspects of ramping the sales program. We were very confident in our ability to sell the protein and our ability to sell the fiber. It was the high viscosity flour starch fractions that we needed to ensure we had the marketability. Those are tracking as per our expectations. As we get more into food uses of those high viscosity flours, we're expecting the margin profile to also improve in that. And so, you know, the feasibility work, you know, we planned already for the third line to be able to be added to Minot. Basically, we have to pull the trigger, and, you know, within, say, 3 months of pulling the trigger, you know, say 3 to 5 months, I guess, that line will be installed and running. In terms of the feasibility of conversion of Regina and or Turkey, we've started costing exercises. And so we are doing both design and costing exercises so that we're ready when the sales program warrants the expansions.
Okay, great. And just as a follow-up then, you know, how should we think about the current mix of business for the ingredients just in terms of the end markets? You know, the shift that we're seeing on the starches and flours, is that into new verticals and new end markets, whether it be on the human or food side? And, you know, does the conversion basically apply that you need to be shipping certain amounts of volumes into some of the higher value human consumption markets, or can it still be satisfied strictly by the more of the broader commoditized end?
Well, like certainly, listen, I don't consider pet food to be the commoditized markets. The starch fractions would be going into a mix of both pet food and also just the basic commodity feed sector. The protein side is going largely into the pet food sector today, but that was expected on line one with the Cargill agreement. As we continue to ramp lines, we're expecting the utilization to be 50% into the pet food branded feed ingredients and 50% into the human food markets. So we're tracking well on progress on sales on the food segment itself. We have a number of large household name clients that have taken product, tested it, even are incorporating it in products that they're producing today. And not only are we meeting their spec, but they're reordering. So, and the quantities are starting to gain some momentum. That's the positive trend that we see. It gives us confidence to move forward.
The next question is from Keith Carpenter with Canaccord Genuity. Please go ahead.
Hi. Couple of questions. The first one on your segment breakdown in the food ingredients and packaged foods. You had similar tons invoiced in Q1 and Q4, but obviously much higher margins. Can you talk to what happened during the quarter if there were, you know, some tons that were lower margin, relatively speaking, that quarter replaced by higher margin, or was it just one piece of business had much higher margins in Q1 versus Q4?
There's one change, Keith, that you have to be aware of. The Click segment was included in quarter one, not in quarter four. And, of course, the Click business, AGT Click, it's not a metric ton business the same way our pasta and the rest of it is. So, you know, it doesn't necessarily track profit in that retail packaging and canning business doesn't run the same as just bulk wholesale metric tons shipped. So that's one of the reasons where you see a lift, and you do have the data in your MD&A as a result of accounting standards. We have to disclose certain information about that acquisition because we have limited the scope of the disclosure because it was a new acquisition. So this is in our internal control certifications. Being that it's first acquired now, you know, we limit the scope, we do our internal controls work, we give you more info to make sure you can understand the effect of that. So Click certainly had part of the effect of that lift where, you know, I think that that obviously contributed. You probably had a little bit less pasta, a little bit less, you know, of the South African segment, a little more on the Click side to basically give you just a modest improvement in profitability. I think that the key thing to take away is second consecutive quarter, we delivered one line of food ingredients and margins seem to be stable to improving. And as we ramp up to a second line and a third line, the contribution to earnings in that food segment is going to be high because we had a huge burn of cost to do the first line. All the staff, two shifts, trained, ready to get the second line, research and development, you know, testing, all of these things are costs. As we ramp up, it's largely, you know, positive margin contribution.
Can I ask you from, do you have a figure or approximation of the cost impact, perhaps to EBITDA from freight issues of moving product east versus you would have moved it west in Q1?
Well, this is Gaetan here. We did a quick calculation here, and we think it would be somewhere around probably about $800,000 in extra cost for moving more product east via intermodals and hopper cars.
And then if we combine the rail spots and the container strike and the movement east-west, it's about $1.5 to $2 million total, Keith.
Okay. And then just a final question.
It was a material impact, but, you know, I think one of the things that everybody keeps pointing to is that it was only a rail issue. It certainly wasn't. It was a supply chain issue. So you had cold weather, you had rail, you had a trucker strike. You really had a disastrous combination of effects. So, you know, we're really positive on what we see with the cooperation from the railways and, you know, other supply chain participants. It's getting a lot better, a lot faster.
Perfect. And then just a final question, if I can, for Lori. On finance expenses, we're almost at $8 million in Q1. Can you just talk to what you would think the run rate is for a 2014 figure?
Yeah, I think, you know, on the $8 million, we're pretty close to loaded right up on our debt now. So I don't foresee that quarterly number going too much higher.
In fact, Keith, remember, you've got finance expense and also trade finance fees and expenses. I mean, we disclose the relative debt levels, and you know our, you know, relative interest rates on our debts because they're all consolidated into a syndicated facility on the Canadian side and the bond issue. So, you know, from that perspective, you likely have somewhere around, you know, $18 to $20 million of interest that's paid, and then the balance, if you annualize that $8 million down to, say, 7 or 7.5, you're probably looking at the balance of those being trade finance fees and expenses, letter of credit discounts, letter of credit fees, documentary collection fees. These are all finance expenses.
The next question is from Christine Healy with Scotiabank. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Hi, guys.
I
just wanted to first add on to just Keith's last question there, just on the, I guess, the rail and weather issues in Western Canada. So given that you expect that some of the tons will get pushed from Q1 into Q2, do you expect that EBITDA in the second quarter may not be as seasonal as normal?
I think that certainly you still see the seasonal effect in quarter two, but certainly we'll end up with some of the improvements that we saw, especially in the latter part of March, will roll into April. So So there's kind of a combined effect. I mean, you never get back a shipping day and a shipping slot. Once it's gone, it's gone. But, you know, we are hoping that the spillover, Christine, will give us a little bit of improvement in the second quarter.
Okay, thanks. And then just one quick one, just a question on your subsequent event note. So the fire at the facility in Alberta, can you just clarify, your note says the operations ceased. Was that just a temporary closure and they're back up now? Just some color to clarify that.
No, this facility, this was actually our smallest production facility in North America. And it was a add-on facility to the acquisition of Fenora. So when we bought that, there were three facilities. Gibbons, Alberta was a pea processing plant doing entirely bulk peas into Asia, almost exclusively. And that facility, we are expecting that it's a total loss. There are certain aspects of it, like the steel silos, that look to be still standing, but all of the structures related to the processing have been lost, and we are insured at that facility. The production that was planned for that has been absorbed by the other facilities in our system. So we don't expect a material impact to any of our operations, and we are continuing to cooperate with local authorities and the insurance company, and then we'll have to make decisions on, you know, rebuild and those types of decisions as we evaluate the situation, Christine.
Great, thank you.
The next question is from Anoop Prihar with GMP Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good afternoon. Most of my questions have been answered, but just to confirm one point, did you say the impact of the rail issues in Q1 was about $1.5 to $2 million in EBITDA or revenue?
No, it was in EBITDA, actually. As Gaetan had mentioned, about $800,000 of additional cost. So that would have been a direct cost of sales impact or an increase. And we estimate about $1.5 million in true, you know, earnings effect.
Okay.
$1.5 to $2 million.
Okay, thank you.
As a reminder, to ask a question, please press star and 1 on your touch-tone phone. Our next question comes from John Chu with AltaCorp Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Just a couple of questions here. The wording in your MD&A says partial or full conversion of some capacity in Canada, Williston, or Turkey. So I'm just trying to understand the wording of that partial or full conversion. I'm assuming you're just referring to the excess capacity, or is there considerations of something more than that?
Well, this is Gaetan here again. For instance, our Regina factory right now, the legacy business that we run through would be our red split lentils. If we do a conversion of the factory for the ingredients, we may leave one line or potentially just add capacity for the fractions and leave the legacy business going as well with a plant expansion. So those are decisions we'll have to make as we move forward.
And that's why we use the word partial or full, because, John, there's excess capacity in certain assets that could be converted later. But if we choose, let's say, the Regina, you know, splitting plant as the first one, we'll have to do that analysis of whether you convert it fully. If you convert it fully, you do lose a value-added processing capacity that we may not want to lose all. So let's just, you know, say hypothetically, if you had 100,000 tons of production capacity, you could decide to convert 75 of it and then augment and keep 50 of the old use and 75 of the new use by a much more limited investment. So those are the decisions that have to be made in the conversion feasibilities.
Right, gotcha. And what was the capacity utilization rate that you exited Q1 with?
Probably, I think I calculated it out on the new revised capacity. So for our analysts, remember to refer to your AIF now. It was refiled March 31st because we've actually clarified the capacities, because now we've converted certain assets to different uses, right? We're using, you know, this plant as a chickpea plant, this plant as a bean plant. So the old stated capacities may be different depending on the products that we're truly intending those assets for use. So if I look at that, we're running about 70% utilization.
But your target for the end of the year was 70%, correct? So what kind of
I think if I look at, I have to remember what we said in our MD&A, but I think we said it was 70 moving by 3% this year. So we actually are doing slightly better than we projected. I'm just flipping through to see. I think we're running at 70 and we were going to target for 73. Yeah, I say here on page 12 of your MD&A, capacity utilizations are to achieve 70. Okay, yeah, it says to achieve 70. So you're correct. We're actually running at our target right now.
Okay, so you're ahead of schedule on that?
Yeah, well, we have to see. I mean, it's only the first quarter. Let's see how we do second, third, and fourth quarters yet.
Right. And then maybe just, Laurie, on the run rate for G&A and on the marketing side, can you give us some insights, the run rates we're seeing in Q1?
Yeah. We had non-recurring expenses of about $800,000 included in the Q1 numbers. So assuming those aren't reoccurring, I think that our run rate for G&A would probably be, you know, slightly below $9 million. Marketing, sales, and distribution is fairly close to regular at around $5.5 to $5.8 million.
If you look at the average, John, of 2013, you're looking, you've got 17, 18, 26, about 36. So you're running on average about $9 million a quarter. We expect it to be very consistent. I mean, there's no reason that we're expecting large G&A increases as we ramp up utilization.
Our next question comes from Stephen Aldridge with BMO Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hello, everybody. Just a question on the pasta business. You mentioned it was down a bit in the quarter. So how much is the pasta business part of AGT? What percentage? And also you mentioned that you were not consolidating it with the flours and things.
Stephen, the segment of food ingredients and packaged foods was only launched as a reporting segment in the fourth quarter. So the pasta business was in the results. It was just combined with the pulses and grains processing segment prior. So, you know, if you look at our pasta business overall, it contributed in the, we have our segmented information, the notes to our financial statements, mm-hmm. and it was about $44 million, which was our pasta, semolina, and bulgur. So that's the milled durum wheat business. So it's running about $44 million of our $311 million. And so, you know, we're running about 14 to 15%. When I said it was down, it wasn't down materially. It was maybe down 1 or 2,000 tons. You have to recall that this is a snapshot March 31st. So if you had inventory sitting there and on April the 3rd you shipped 3,000 tons, you know, it just doesn't get included in this quarter. It gets included in the next. So our pasta business is running, you know, probably 10% of sales, and we're running at very high utilization rates. And so we're expecting that to continue.
Our next question comes from Mark Robinson with Cormark Securities. Please go ahead.
Hey, good morning. So there's been quite a bit of R&D work that's gone on at the Minot facility. And, you know, my understanding is, you know, you come up with some prospective products that then get pitched to food companies. Can you give us a sense of what the sort of aggregate expenditure has been in terms of R&D, or what it looks like sort of on a run rate basis, and what the success rate has been typically when you present some of these ideas to these food companies?
Yeah, just to clarify one thing, Mark, the ideas that we're pitching are almost exclusively ingredients, not actual products. So, you know, we would be, let's say, you know, we're being asked to take a meatball application, you know, where they're using, you know, breadcrumbs. And a meatball or a meat company will come to us and say, we'd like to replace 7% inclusion of breadcrumbs to make a gluten-free meatball. So what we'll do is we'll present to them a formulation of pulses-based flours and proteins to be able to replace that breadcrumb and to give them the data of the texture, the, you know, taste and mouthfeel. Like, we actually have machinery that, you know, simulates the human mouth chewing, that gives you a texture profile or a mouthfeel profile. So those are the type of things that we do. And we're spending about $1 million a year in our R&D budget. So we have, currently about $1 million allocated this calendar year. We augment that with certain research grants that we receive from both the Saskatchewan, the federal governments, the North Dakota state government, and also the contributions of our food company partners. So, you know, we actually have large household name food companies contributing into the project in which they're asking us to work on. We've had a good level of success of introducing concepts and actually making sales. And we made the comment in our MD&A that we take test quantities and we convert those into commercial quantities. And then once they order, when they reorder and they order and ramp up the volumes, that's commercialization success. So that's where we're optimistic about where we're going on the food side, is that line two is ready. We now have the quantities available. Now we're really pushing the marketing program to be able to deliver, and we're optimistic this is going to materialize in Q2, Q3, and Q4 of 2014.
Okay, and just a quick question, and if you've answered this, I apologize, but we're now sort of 2 months in or post the commissioning date on line two. So can you, or are you willing to provide a bit of an update on what utilization looks like at line two at present?
Yeah, I would say that line two, it started commissioning the 10th of March. So in quarter one, you had very little contribution of that as we were ramping it up and testing and ensuring the product quality met all of our specifications. So starting in April into May, we're probably running about 50% utilization on that line. We had a target to be at 2/3 utilization by the end of the quarter. And so then we would be, if we can achieve that, Mark, we'll be on target for the same as we did on line one, which is 5 to 6 months full utilization, you know, announce the expansion to line three and continue to ramp up, you know, 3 to 4 months after we announce that. So by end of calendar year, we may be in a position where we have a line three announced and hopefully getting ready to commission.
Good. Thank you.
The next question is from Keith Carpenter with Canaccord Genuity. Please go ahead.
Just a follow-up question on the trading and distribution. You guys had stated in your MD&A that the margins had declined quarter over quarter because of fewer government tender contracts. Can you comment on whether there were, and I don't know if the abnormally high contracts in Q4, abnormally low contracts in Q1, do you see any rhyme or reason to those in any given quarter, or is it just kind of come as they go?
This is certainly our opportunistic segment, Keith, that, you know, what I think we're going to see going forward in second, third, fourth quarters is more of the tenders. We're actually receiving probably more tenders overall, but they're much more in the products that we actually produce, which, by the way, is a good thing, not a bad thing. The trading and distribution segment is products that we were being awarded that we weren't even producing. So, you know, we had some large-scale sugar, you know, contracts to government agencies. And we can divide it into two things, food aid or what we call food stability programs. So food stability would be governments importing in order to ensure availability of basic commodities. So we were seeing that with, you know, Libya, Egypt, Algeria, you know, Kuwait, you know, all of these countries were starting to, or continuing to do that. We're seeing a bit less of that. That probably contributed to, you know, less earnings in that particular segment. Am I bothered by that? Absolutely not. It's opportunistic. You know, it consumes capital, less duration than our legacy businesses, of course, but I would much rather ramp up the utilization of my own assets than continue to trade more.
Our next question is from Steve Hansen with Raymond James. Please go ahead.
Yeah, just quickly a follow-up on the the ingredient margins, Murad. You've referred to the cash, or pardon me, the margin impact on the initial ramp-up of line one, and alluding to margins getting better here as line two ramps, and certainly I would suspect line three. But, you know, can you give us even a rough framework or idea of the margin per ton that you're looking for here to ramp up through Minot, and whether or not that would differ at all as you go through a conversion opportunity?
I think the quick answer to that is no, I can't give you any more guidance on that, Steve. But what we have given you is we've given you a segment margin now where you see an EBITDA per ton over $100 a ton. That's, of course, a long way from our legacy business. And, you know, we certainly wanted to, we want to see, as we continue to ramp up this segment, you can be rest assured I'm not expecting margins to come down. You know, I certainly want to maintain and build on the positive margin performance that we showed even on reporting two quarters. So you can hypothesize that, you know, as I mentioned, we're burning $1 million on R&D. You know, we have a significant amount of cost in marketing, sales, trade shows, you know, travel, production staff. Like, you know, we were running double the number of employees for the last, say, 6 months, because these are not unskilled labor positions, right? We're talking about very highly specialized processing compared to what we do in our legacy business. And as a result of that, we brought staff on, we trained them. We're running double people on shifts to be able to have people available to run second and third shifts. So as a result of all that, you know, the burn rate on our margin side has been significant. Line two and three will certainly have a positive contribution. And then, you know, certainly we're going to see that as we go ahead.
Our final question comes from John Chu with AltaCorp Capital. Please go ahead.
One quick question. Just wanted to clarify the decision process for production line three at Minot. Do you need to see the second line being fully ramped up and at full capacity utilization, or do you need to see roughly two-thirds of commitments from potential customers before you advance and go ahead with line three, or is it a bit of both?
You know what, John, I think that's going to be almost the same time. If I keep to the idea of what I said earlier, which is if we expect the second line to be at two-thirds utilization by the end of this quarter, you know, and we said that if we want to ramp up line two on the same pace as line one, we ramped up line one in about 5 months or 6 months of production time. So that should foreshadow to you that if the sales program goes according to our plan, you may see a conversion announcement, you know, by, say, quarter three or so. So, yeah, we want visibility, meaning that, you know, we don't want to guess whether we're going to sell a third line. We want line two to be pretty much a slam dunk. And then we want line three to even have sales queuing up as we're installing it. And this is the way that if momentum builds, it will immediately lead again after the third line to the plans accelerating on a conversion in either Regina or Turkey. So we're optimistic that the dynamic momentum is going to continue, and we're going to be able to show a very material ramp up in the next 18 months.
I will now hand the call over back to Mr. Al-Khatib for closing comments.
Thank you very much, operator. Thank you, Murad. That brings us to the end of our questions in the session. I'd like to thank you all for joining us on the call. I'd like to remind everyone that's still on the call, if you do have any follow-up questions, you can feel free to contact us at our Regina head office, and we'd be more than happy to follow up with you. Again, thank you for attending our conference call, and I'd like to wish you all a good day.
This concludes today's conference call. You may disconnect your lines. Thank you for participating and have a pleasant day.